Coaches, there's never been a better time to jump all in on the Coaches membership. The program has more than it's ever had, full of support, resources, teaching materials, webinars, player resource videos, captain courses, green team kits to verify your players, all the tools you need to develop your athletes into the leaders needed to win, all in one place. Take advantage of the Coaches membership. Join the thousands of coaches around the country and begin developing your players into those leaders you need to win.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A.
Thank you for hanging with us today. I'm Adam alongside Kyle Elmendorf, and good to be back, Kyle. Our last episode, I went solo just because our schedules were out of control. You were in California. You were in Maryland for a week and then California, and then you're headed to Georgia soon. I am just got to Eastern Washington, Kennewick, Eastern Washington. Most people probably have never been to this place, the Tri-Cities here. And just came from Michigan. I'm going to be here for a couple of days and then head to New York. So our schedule, definitely in the month of August every year, is going to be really busy. And so good to be back. Good to connect again. And I'm excited for the topic, Kyle. You know, you better be clear. And I think this is going to be a great, helpful reminder for our coaches of the need to be very intentional with our communication. So let me just tell you a quick little story. This past week, I was home for 2 days. And my oldest, I was responsible for taking her to the dentist. And my oldest daughter, who's 8, safe to say, does not like the dentist. It's not a fun experience, okay? And right. My daughter has a tendency, like a lot of kids, when they get on that hamster wheel of emotion, they can't get off. You know, and like once they get worked up over something, it just snowballs, and it takes a while to kind of get her to calm and reset.
Yeah.
My wife tried to take her to the dentist a couple months ago. Couldn't work, right? She was just not having it. She was sitting in the chair. It was just not a great, you know, her anxiousness and things like that were starting to kind of come into play. So we got referred to a kid pediatric dentist, and I took her this past week. And the one thing they do there is they have the ability to use nitrous, that laughing gas, to calm kids.
Gotcha.
So we thought that was going to happen, Kyle. And going in, I told Georgia, and here was my mistake. I failed. And this is where we're going to play into today's episode. I told Georgia that if she did a good job at the dentist, that we could go to Five Below afterwards. She loves Five Below. I mean, my oldest is addicted to toys and stuffed animals. She loves it. So like a trip to Five Below is like Disney World for her. All right. And I don't mind it that much because it is Five Below, right? So we're not like going to Target shopping aisle where everything's like 30, 40, 50 bucks.
Right.
Anyway, so I told her, Kyle, if you do a great job or a good job at the dentist today, we will go to Five Below. So we go in there and the dentist says, you know, I know we have the ability to use nitrous. And I recognize that she didn't have a great experience, but we don't want to go that route without trying it without it. Right. Because that like we don't want to just get in the habit of having to do that every time. There's an extra cost for you. You don't want to get in the habit of paying every time. And we've got some strategies and techniques that we use here that not traditional dentists will use that we think could maybe help us. Okay. So I said, all right, let's go. So they go and they do a bunch of different things. It was actually really cool. They let her actually do the dentistry on a fake mouth with all the tools. So they let her like touch all the tools and they have all the tools. They give them unique names. Right. So they don't actually like the scraper. I think it's like they don't call it a metal scraper. They call it something else. I forget. Right.
Yeah. It's going to sound a little bit better.
Yeah. And they've got a TV on the ceiling. So when they put the kid back, they can look up at the ceiling and watch the TV. But they let them practice with the dentistry and do it with a fake mouth first, just to show that it's not anything scary. They go through every single tool. And like, they've got this whole routine, which I thought was really, really good. And Georgia was rocking and rolling. She was rocking and rolling. The first half of the dentist experience that day, she was all in, letting them do whatever. But then one little nick of sorts, maybe hurt a little bit or she felt it a little bit, and then it was over.
Wheels came off.
What?
The wheels, came off.
Wheels came off, man. And it just didn't play out. Like, they weren't able to finish. And by then it was too late to do the nitrous. They said, look, at this point, she's already kind of so worked up, you know, and like over it. Well, I'll just have to come back another day. And, you know, but, you know, they weren't able to take the exams at the end because at that point she just wasn't willing. So they were able to get through about 60% of what they needed to do, right? But not 100%. Now, granted, the 60%, based on what my wife shared, was an improvement based on her first experience the last time, where they didn't really get a chance to do anything, okay?
Okay.
So as we're driving home, Georgia goes, do we still get to go to Five Below? I said, Georgia, we can't go to Five Below. We can't go to Five Below. Like, it just, we didn't do everything that we needed to do. We didn't let the dentist do everything they needed to do. We have to go back in a couple months. We didn't see it through. To which it created a firestorm, Kyle. And I totally understand where she's going. Her impression was that if she did a good job, she could go to Five Below. Because those were the words, quote unquote, that I said. If you do a good job, bam, we will go to Five Below. In her mind, she did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
She did more than she's ever done before, right? She did twice as much, if not three times as much as she did her last visit, right? She let them do this, this, and this, and these various components of the appointment. In her mind, she said, Daddy, I did good. I did good, Daddy. I did. And I looked at her, and it was in that moment that I realized, like, I failed. I just simply didn't communicate clear enough. And as I reflect on that, we went home and we talked to, you know, brought my wife into the conversation, and she's telling me, like, babe, you did say if she did good, like, you know, she could go. And like, but you never put any clarity around what that meant. You never articulated she had to do everything all the way through. Although you probably thought it was never communicated. And look where this disconnect is now. She thinks you're saying she's not good enough. She didn't do good enough, when in reality she did. She was brave for that portion and things of that nature. Reminds me of coaching, man. It hit me dead smack in my between my eyes, Kyle, as I was having that conversation. I said, wow, if this isn't a clear example of what coaches suffer and experience and what players experience with their interactions with coaches, then I don't know what it is from a communication standpoint, because it happens all the time where we will throw out things. If we have a great practice today, I need to see a great performance, right? I need to see us with full effort, right? All these different phrases. And then the players engage in a way that they think they're honoring the coach in turn, right? Coach then comes after the fact, not feeling settled with the performance, not feeling like it was up to par, and then says, no, I'm not happy with what we did today. I don't think we did what we needed to do today. And it leaves players sometimes wondering, almost with their hands up the way Georgia was, well, you said I needed to be good and I thought I was good.
Right.
Kyle, you're hearing all this. This was last Wednesday. What are your thoughts when you hear this, Kyle?
First place goes to immediately is our green standards and the need for clarity there. And most of our coaches know that we'll talk, we'll share examples that when teams are creating standards or casting that vision, one of those words that gets put in the mix, and deservedly so all the time, is hardworking. And we talk about that all the time. But again, that is just so subjective that we need to be more clear in it. And, you know, I can think back to times when I was a coach myself to where those same statements were made before a practice, maybe after a game regarding the next practice, of like, we need to work harder, we need to do this a little bit better. But in the players' minds, I can see where that leaves a lot of room for interpretation and not a specific goal to reach. So we're all guilty of that for sure.
Let's build on what you just shared right there, Kyle. It leaves room for interpretation.
Yeah.
Coaches, think about this and process this and truly reflect on it. how much is of what we are communicating is open for interpretation on the other end, right? Like, how many times throughout the course of a practice, throughout the course of a pregame, throughout the course of a pre-practice conversation, or even in the course of just daily interactions with our players, how much is, of what we share is open for interpretation versus how much is crystal clear with full alignment and understanding, almost to the point of feeling overbearing with your level of detail, where you almost feel condescending because you've gone into so much nuance and detail to make sure clarity and alignment is shared. That's a great call out, Kyle, like leaving it open for interpretation, because if it is left open for interpretation, you are destined for miscommunication, because the chances of the other individual interpreting it in the complete same manner that you are is very slim. I don't know what the numbers are, right? But just think about in general. Right. Very rarely. I mean, you would think, I almost look at like relationships, like business owners. I remember doing a podcast back in the day with friends of ours over at Soldier Fit. Right? We do lead them up at Soldier Fit, and the owners there, they're 50-50 owners. They have known each other for like 25 years. I mean, they've lived with each other. I mean, they are basically brothers, right? From another mother. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. I mean, they're very, very close. I remember them talking at that stage of their life that they've gotten their relationship to the point where they just know what the other person is thinking and feeling and envisioning, that they have gotten to that place. But I want you to understand that that's a situation where you've got two individuals that have been together for 25 years, lockstep, daily communication, owning a business 50-50 for a decade plus, right? Having lived together. I mean, that is a very rare high level of connection between two people. I feel like it is that at that point where you may get to the place where others are interpreting exactly what you're saying, right? And probably at a very high success rate, 90% of the time, things of that nature. I can promise you there's a good chance we don't have that type of history in connection with our players to assume. Right. Not to mention the age gap and the generational gap and the experience gap, to assume that our players can just pick up in what we're sharing and interpret it in the same manner that we are. And I mean,
for coaches being in that situation, a lot of times it's very easy to speak in generalizations. And a lot of times you'll hear it phrased as coach speak. And for lack of, you know, just of clarity on our end, we'll tend to go that route and speak in those generalizations because that's the way it was done when we were coached. And that's what we heard from other coaches. So just doing so, sometimes we need to just pause and reflect and think about beforehand, what do I want to say? Before you go into the locker room, before practice, is just having a minute to collect your thoughts and to really try to articulate in your mind before you even share with the team of what is it truly that I want to say, and kind of start in that route. But, you know, from the player's perspective, what happens is when there's not clarity and there's so much confusion on maybe what the goal is, you feel defeated and you feel like you're never going to meet the mark, or you feel like you're never going to be able to meet the standard. So there's so many different ways that this can go, but it all speaks to the need that being clear and concise while also making sure that we're very detailed in our messaging is super important.
I think we need to collect a subjective sensitivity that when we share words that are subjective in nature, essentially open for interpretation, right? Mm-hmm. The opportunity for each person to view it through their lens, based on their experience, their current thought process, their current perspective, a subjective sensitivity that anytime we share a word that can be viewed and defined as a subjective word, we immediately heighten our sensitivity. We find ourselves in that moment recognizing, I just shared a subjective word. Let me now do the rest of the work on it. Let me now put context behind it. Let me now put definition, substance behind it. And recognizing it will take work to do that, but it is helping us then as communicators avoid the trap of subjectiveness, which causes so much miscommunication and frustration when it happens and occurs in our interpersonal communication.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of like text communication, right? And it's in that regard of where someone can send a text message and you in your mind are sending it and it's through one lens. But if it's subjective in nature, the other person opens up and reads it with a different lens or frame. And then they interpret it completely opposite of your intention. But in their defense, it was somewhat subjective. So you're right. There has to be context. You have to provide that, even though it may seem like very elementary, rudimentary in nature. But we have to, just because we're processing so much information at all the time. I heard that today at church. It's just when the human mind is processing over a million different things in any given minute. Now, that's not all consciously, that's subconsciously, but still, like, we're all trying to filter things down and make it make sense. And we have to help people out when we're communicating. We have to make it simple for them.
Hey, this is Ashley from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's Leadership Nugget. Looking to grow and develop in your own leadership abilities? I think emotional intelligence is the number one characteristic a 21st century leader must embody. Two key traits of emotional intelligence are self-awareness and empathy. For us to have a positive impact and inspire motivation in our team members, this requires that we are able to discern what's happening internally with ourselves, along with the people around us. To lead a team to a more effective workplace, we must know each other's styles and preferences to work as a team to find common ground in all we do. Leaders who embody high emotional intelligence can 1. Communicate their vision more effectively. 2. Improve their persuasion and inspirational speaking abilities. And 3. Ensure appropriate responses to stressful and sometimes confusing situations at work. Regardless of the many theories out there about what makes a good leader, it doesn't happen overnight. Remember, leadership is a journey. If you're looking to be a better, more effective leader, or if you're working on personal growth, discerning your emotional intelligence is a great place to start. Now, let's jump back into the episode.
You know, if you have spent any time around me of late, you hear me talk often about my favorite app on my phone. You remember what it is, Kyle?
Yeah, it's the...
I shared it a couple sessions. I know it's a unique one.
No, I've got it on my phone. The etymology, right?
Etymology, the studying and origin of words, right? So once again, you'll probably hear me and get tired of me hearing this. Not just you. I'm talking about the audience in general. I just think it helps give insight to the words we speak, and for me, it's helping me be more intentional to communicate, although I started the episode with a fail, right? It's causing me to be more intentional to communicate the words clearly, to have better understanding, to articulate it. You know, when you look at subjective in the etymology app, once again, check it out, E-Y-T-M-O-L-O-G-Y, right there. You can get etymology online, download it in the app store, and just have fun with it. Put words in anytime you're going to, let's say you say hustle and you put it in the app. See where it came from. See what other roots it's from. See what it's connected to in the English language and beyond. See other ways to describe and define it. It'll help you better teach it on the flip side. But when you put subjective in, there's a couple of dynamics within it that's really interesting. When you go back to modern English, 1707, It is existing in one's mind. Existing in one's mind. You go on later and it connects it to this personal idiosyncrasy, right? Idiosyncrasy, the mode or way of thought that is unique and peculiar to one individual. So you think about that, right? Existing in one's mind, right? Or the idiosyncrasy, the way of thought, very unique to an individual. I mean, the true nature of subjective is actually telling us there will be variance in its interpretation. Yeah, it's literally saying that. It's saying what is unique in your mind. It's an idiosyncrasy that is unique to you. It's what exists in your mind. So when we share words that have subjective tendencies and natures to it, we are by definition speaking to a miscommunication, speaking to two varying definitions of it, right? One that is unique to your mindset, one is unique to mine, right? That in and of itself is a recipe for potential communication, but also a door opening for us to try to fight against that, to be more intentional, to help prevent the potential of miscommunication that can come from it. So, so key. And I really believe, I mean, PGC basketball, one of our friends there, I mean, they have an entire section in their basketball coaches portal about becoming a master teacher. Mm-hmm. Becoming a master teacher. And I don't know everything that's in their program there from the master teacher dynamic, but I've talked to the guys enough and certainly know them and close enough that like, this is part of it. This is part of it. Moving from a coach, hey, we need to work hard today. Hey, we need to get full effort today. Hey, we need a great practice today. Going from coach talk, which that is coach talk, we're all mm-hmm. familiar with it, to actually getting to the place where we become a master teacher, where we begin to kind of articulate and put context around words that are oftentimes vague and ambiguity within our communication that provide clear instruction so the audience fully grabs a hold of it, that they walk into the court or onto the field with clear understanding of expectations and vision and standards, that we have gone that extra route to not just be a coach, but be a master teacher. And I believe this one right here about subjective use of language is one of the biggest downfalls and pitfalls where we open ourselves up to failure. And the problem oftentimes is we deny it.
Yeah.
We deny it. We say, I mean, I don't understand how my daughter could be not on the same page as me. I was very clear. I said, if you do good at the dentist, first of all, that's not improper English, but nonetheless, that's what I said. Okay.
Yeah. Right?
That if you do good at the dentist, you wouldn't go to Five Below. How does she not understand it? That's a failure on me. That is me lowering my bar of expectation of standards in communication and just assuming and hoping and right. That you're not reading my mind, Georgia. Georgie, you weren't able to fill in the details that I was too unwilling to share to you, or just simply unaware to share to you. You just weren't able to fill in all those gaps to know exactly what I was thinking, Georgia. Like, that is completely unfair to her.
Yeah.
And we do it to our players.
For us as coaches, I think the way that we want to be able to communicate is, like you said, the master teaching route is, can they then take what you've delivered and share that with someone else? So can the athlete take the directions and the instructions that we've given it and then teach that to someone else? Because if they can, we've probably done our job. We've been effective in our communication because they clearly understand it. If they can't and they speak in generalizations that they come back and ask us for clarification, then we need to be obviously doing a better job at that. So that's one way that I look at that and how we can maybe measure our effectiveness in the communication.
Put some thoughts to this, Kyle. What are some of the most common coach subjective phrases and terms that come to mind for you? I'll start. Okay. I think one of the biggest, I said it already. We need a great practice today.
Yeah.
We need a great practice today. Here's another one. We need leaders to step up. I mean, are you,
That's a big one. That's a big pet peeve. It's like, where's our leaders at? We need our leaders to step up.
I mean, is that not the most?
We haven't done anything all year to help.
Is that not well? Yeah, but is that not the most subjective thing of all time? Like, leaders step up. We need a great practice today. Hey, we need to hustle. Yeah. Those are just some that come to mind. What comes to mind?
We need people to speak up, but no one's had a chance to talk all year long. No one's had an opportunity to speak all year long. They don't know what to share. They don't know what to do. We need, you know, when we talk about like high energy sometimes, what do we, we need high energy? But again, what does high energy mean? You know, does that mean we just run around crazy during the gym? We just run around crazy at practice and full effort. Oh gosh. Well, another one is like, we need 110%. You can't give 110%.
But if you did, what would it look like? Right. And, you know, here's an example of my recent world is, you know, in my teaching of the intensity spectrum, if you're not familiar with that one, we recently just made it available to our coaches and our coaches membership. It is in the webinar section there. The intensity spectrum is an exercise that we've been teaching in live training for the last 12 to 18 months. It is dynamic. But like most things, we wanted to flush it out and really expand on it some more and finally made it available to our coaches. But that here's an example. As I've been teaching that, once again, trying to grow as a teacher, grow in my ability to communicate. Intensity is a great word that I've shifted over the last 12 to 18 months to provide more clarity and context because it is a subjective word. So here's an example of me recognizing that there's probably been way too many times I say, hey, we need to raise our intensity, but never articulating it clearly. And once I have unpacked it, I realize, oh my gosh, I've been failing my teams. Because you ask most players, hey, we need to raise our intensity, they automatically go to passion. Right? Yeah. But they automatically go to passion. I got to bring the energy. I got to bring the passion. Let's go. Let's go. We need that intensity up. Let's go. Right? That's what we think. But the way I teach it and the way I shared in the webinar for you all to view is you look at the history of that word intensity. It wasn't recorded in society until 1830. And when it was recorded in society in 1830, it was connected to this definition of extreme depth of one's passion and desire, extreme depth. And that's what most of us think. We think about intensity is that passion, that deep passion. Think about an intense movie. Right? Scene in a movie, you can feel it inside, and picture an intense love scene in a movie, right? You can feel the passion and fire between the two. You think about just the intensity of an MMA fight, man, both fighters wanting it badly, putting it all on the line. That is what our players think. Intensity, that deep passion, 1830. Yes, that's the definition, but you go beyond it. And you look more into that word, you also learn that, well, if it wasn't created or established in society until 1830, recorded, where did it come from? Well, it came from intentional, which was around since 1400. And when you look at the definition of intentional, Kyle, it is to act and operate with great purpose, aim, and precision. Mm-hmm. Purpose, aim, and precision. So when you look at intensity and actually look at the history of it, that word actually has twofold meaning. On one end, it's that extreme depth of passion that we often associate it with, but it's also to operate with great purpose, aim, and precision, more of the mental. So you think about a painter who's working hours on a painting on canvas, and he or she is clearly paying attention to every detail and they're locked in and nobody's distracting them. They're in the zone. Would you agree that painter is very intense? Oh my gosh. Oh, they're absolutely very intense. Like they're just
100%.
I mean, they are intently looking and working on this and don't interrupt that person, but they're not screaming.
No.
With passion.
Yeah, the eyes aren't bulging out of their head. Blood vessels aren't popping out. No,
but their intensity is. Oh, it's so intense, right? Uh-huh. So take a word like that where we as coaches just commonly throw it out there. Hey, we need to raise the intensity level. Well, look at the variance there. Have you gone through the process of actually defining it clearly? When you say intensity, are you just wanting your team to go out and run and scream? And part of the reason why we explain in that intensity spectrum exercise, we have to teach it, is because I want, when we're talking about how to raise our daily intensity, I want to make sure our players know, when I have you leave here, I want you with crystal clarity, knowing what I want to see. I want to see the intensity raise, which is a combination of both that passion with that intentionality of precision. It is a combination, almost like our mixing board of bass and treble. But without that clarity and definition, picture the subjective nature of it. Picture the subjective nature. All of a sudden, the team goes out and they run around and they're yelling and screaming, Kyle. But they're not disciplined. They're making mental mistakes. And all of a sudden I get frustrated because I don't feel like we're just not, you know, the intensity wasn't, you know, it's not showing up the way I'd envisioned in my head. It's showing up. Well, maybe you didn't communicate it well enough. I know I'm guilty of it at times.
Falls back on us. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have to take a look in the mirror on that.
So coaches, just want to challenge you. Our communication has to be clear. And let's begin to heighten our subjective sensitivity. To be aware that when we communicate words that are subjective by nature, just know, just simply by the definition of the word, it is destined for miscommunication. It is destined. You are teeing it up for miscommunication on the other end, misalignment. And then when miscommunication and lack of alignment is there, then frustrations begin to build, right? Because I'm frustrated for one reason or another. We've got to heighten our subjective sensitivity in our communication. Coaches, hope today's episode just kind of challenged you just once again to be a little intentional, maybe a little bit better, 1%, right? In light of today's episode, finding a way just to grow as a coach, as a leader, as a communicator. Kyle, thank you so much. As always, I am Adam, and on behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team, until next time, we are out.